Welcome to VOA's live coverage of the vice presidential debate. Republican vice presidential candidate, U.S. Senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance, and his Democratic rival, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, will square off in New York City. With me tonight here in our Washington, D.C. studio is VOA Africa in Brief host Chinedu Afor. And on the phone with us is VOA reporter Tina Trin from our New York bureau. Also on the line are a couple of our guest analysts, Wendy Schiller, interim director of the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs and political science professor at Brown University in Rhode Island, Yetunde Ogbuduebezaban Omeide. Yetunde Ogbuduebezaban Omeide. She's professor of global affairs and politics at Farmingdale State College in New York. Welcome and thanks to all of you for joining us tonight. Let's start with you, Tina Trin. This will be the one and only vice presidential debate of the 2024 campaign. And as far as I know, it's going to be the last debate period before voters go to the polls. It brings together Vance and Walz, who for the past couple of months now have been attacking each other, as well as those at the top of their respective tickets. Why are voters going to tune in to watch this debate?
Hi, Carol. That's right. This is the first and only time that we're going to see both Vance and Walz in the same room together. I mean, they've both gotten a lot of attention thus far in the campaign for remarks that they've made. Vance, most notably, for calling Democrats childless cat ladies. Walz for calling Trump and Vance weird. And these have gotten a lot of attention from voters. They're definitely spirited and outspoken, and I think a lot of viewers will be tuning in to see that energy on display.
Professor Omeide, this is Chinedu Afor here. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes, I can. Thank you.
Yeah. What strength do you think Mr. Walz brings to the table, or why did you think Vice President Kamala Harris picked him to be her running mate? And at the same time, J.D. Vance, what does he bring to the Republican ticket?
Well, each of these men in their own way represent the Midwest. J.D. Vance hailing from the state of Ohio and Tim Walz from Minnesota. These are parts of the electorate, the Midwest of America, that both Trump and Harris have been seeking to attract and make up for. And so each man with their backgrounds as coach, teacher, that's Tim Walz, and then J.D. Vance hailing from the Rust Belt state of Ohio with family in Kentucky, each speak about their upbringing, their humble upbringing, the community values that they carry with them, and the culture that they grew up in. And so each person in their own right represents an appeal to the electorate in the Midwest section of America, which Trump and Harris both need to gain ground in.
Thanks. And Yetunde, what is the biggest job these two VP candidates have to accomplish tonight, would you say?
I think the two VP candidates have to accomplish basically selling the front runner to the American people, right? They're going to be basically speaking on the platform of, you know, why they are, you know, party should be the one leading America at this crucial time where we're at. So they'll be talking about their individual strengths and how they'll be supportive of the president, you know, in terms of where the, you know, American economy is on foreign policy. So there will be questions, and I think that they'll be able to sit there and try to sway the American vote to ensure that either party, one of them, gets the ticket.
I mean, and of course, there are myriads of issues, you know, everybody's looking at, and of course, what's going on. But from your estimation, what do you think are going to be the two or top three issues that Walz and Vance would have to explain their position tonight?
They're definitely going to be looking at the economy.
Yeah.
Yes, they're definitely going to be looking at the economy. Do we have an impending shutdown, and what does that mean? They may touch on foreign policy as well and where they stand with that in support of their candidate, their presidential candidate partner. And I think they're just going to be looking at, and the main thing that they're going to also be focusing on, I think, out of those topics are really the economy. I think the foreign policy, they may speak to it briefly, but I think that's more in the territory of the president. However, the economy and what's going on right now. I think that's the main focus that people want to hear.
Tina, you're there in New York City. Can you tell us a little bit about the atmosphere at the debate stage? For example, are there going to be people in the audience? Like, what are the rules?
So right now, not going to be happening with an audience on set. So there will be no live audience on the set. The debate will last for 90 minutes. Each of the nominees have 2 minutes to answer questions, with 1 minute given to the opposing nominee for a rebuttal. There will be two moderators. This is hosted by CBS News. I was out there today in front of the debate venue earlier, and already protesters were gathering, supporters chanting for either Harris or Trump. And so definitely a lot of energy building up to the debate tonight.
And Wendy, if you can hear me, do we know how Vance and Walls are viewed by Americans? And specifically, what about the diaspora population, and how do you think they view each candidate on the thorny issue of especially immigration?
Vance is one of the least popular vice presidential candidates in the last 20 to 30 years. Walz is slightly more popular. He hasn't said as many controversial things because he was the governor of Minnesota, so Minnesota paid attention. He got reelected in Minnesota relatively easily. J.D. Vance has been a senator only for a little while, but has really gone out there in some of his statements to attract attention to himself, partially to be considered for VP, which he ultimately got. His views on immigration are more extreme than the American public, which wants, you know, border enforcement, but wants to expand, essentially, the number of legal immigrants that come to the country. So I think the division in America is really about enforcing legal versus undocumented immigration, and also separating refugees who come here legally with migrants, and that rhetoric has been very difficult in the American public because it gets mixed up quite a bit. So Walz is less known, I think, than Vance, but it works to his advantage right now because he hasn't said anything that's really offended anybody.
Tina, you've been following these candidates for quite a while now, since they've been announced. Does one of these candidates have more to prove on the debate stage tonight? And if so, which one?
I think they're both fairly unknown to the wider public. This is going to be the biggest audience likely to see them both at the same time. And so, again, Vance is a freshman senator, fairly inexperienced in office. Tim Walz has been a two-term governor for the state of Minnesota, so better known locally. But they each have a lot to prove because they're both still fairly unknown to the larger American public. And one other interesting thing to note about tonight's debate is that there's actually going to be a lack of fact-checking by the moderators. So the two will be expected to fact-check each other, which, given all of the comments going back and forth lately between the two, expected to be interesting, to say the least.
That's a good way to put it, interesting. So do you know, like, compared to the past presidential debates, and of course there were two now, you know, between Trump and Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris and Trump, are they giving about the same amount of time for their answers and, you know, for rebuttals, or how does that work?
Yeah, so each will have 2 minutes to respond to questions and then 1 minute for rebuttals from the other side. We'll have two commercial breaks, but otherwise expect 90 minutes of a debate here. So they're going to cover all the topics that were previously covered. So definitely the economy is top of mind for a lot of American voters right now, the state of immigration, and also abortion.
Yeah, Yetunde, I want you to weigh in on a point Wendy raised a few minutes ago, talking about the popularity or not of either man. Going into this debate, a new AP NOC poll indicates Walz is better liked than Vance, but really in the bigger scheme of things, does that even matter when U.S. voters go to the polls?
I definitely do think it matters because tonight both of them will have the opportunity to introduce themselves to millions of Americans, right, who relatively before they both had low profiles. And so their performance tonight really is going to be a reflection on the judgment and really the decision-making skill of the presidential nominees who really selected them. So I think it does actually matter, and being that this is the last debate, this will sway a lot of viewers and a lot of people who are either moderates or undecided or independent to vote one way or the other.
And, Wendy, you know, the battleground states, everybody's talking about lately more and more the three battleground states in the Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. You know, with the points that Yatenda just made, do you think that it's going to come down to those three states that will decide this election? And are they, you think that these two candidates are, you know, kind of focusing on those three states with whatever they say for their answers?
I think that the terrain has expanded this year for the swing states. It's true that if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz can win those three states, you know, they're much closer to winning the presidency. The Trump campaign is counting on Arizona, North Carolina, and Georgia to get them over the map. If they win Pennsylvania, they win the presidency. So really, it's interesting. You really need one combination of Western, Midwestern, and even East Coast states. And, of course, with the terrible hurricane affecting North Carolina, we just don't know if that's going to affect voter turnout in some parts of that state that could balance one way or the other for Trump or Harris. So this is their strategy. But tonight, the Democrats have to remind people that Trump is older. They have to remind people that J.D. Vance may be closer to becoming president if something happens to Donald Trump than Tim Walz is for Harris. So the question is, do they see them as only VPs, or are they also seeing, you know, can they run the country? Are they two people you would entrust with the presidency if that happens? And I think voters have that more on the top of their mind than they do in a previous election.
Andrina, let me just ask you what you're getting from both campaigns, inside the campaigns. How are they approaching this debate? And is there a danger? Are they going to be hesitant? And if you recall the last debate with former President Trump, when he was asked a particular question and he said he had not even discussed with his vice presidential nominee, who raised the issue at a campaign. So are they a little bit hesitant not to, quote-unquote, outshine their bosses, so to speak, and will that affect how they go into this debate?
I think that was certainly a misstep with the Trump-Vance campaign, each speaking and not conferring with one another beforehand. So it shows that there's a bit of a lack of communication there, and perhaps a little bit of disagreement, but that's what tonight is the chance to prove otherwise to voters, is that they are in lockstep with each other, and this is their position on certain issues, and so they have a little bit of ground to make up. If you talk to most pundits, publics, I think many would agree that Harris won the last presidential debate. And so perhaps this is a kind of do-over or a chance to make up for that last performance from Trump. And this is Vance's opportunity to do that tonight.
And I wanted to ask you, Tina, you know, these two are going into this debate just a few hours, really, after Iran attacked Israel with these long-range missiles, nearly 200 of these missiles. How do you think that's going to weigh in this? Do you think they're going to be talking about that? And how do you think that they're going to, you know, separate themselves and their positions and showing that they're both, I would imagine, going to say they both strongly support Israel. But how are they going to, you know, set themselves apart?
I think foreign policy is going to be one of the areas of weakness for these two men on stage. They haven't had that experience thus far, and so that is definitely going to be a touchy topic. It will be interesting to see how each responds. I'm expecting that they will both say that they support Israel's right to defend itself, and at the same time, you do see some distancing from the Harris side in terms of support for Palestinians in Gaza and and so forth. So it will be interesting to see, because that has so far tended to be the weaker subject matter for both of these candidates.
Yeah, Professor Yetunde, are you expecting some kind of a policy debate, or are you expecting these two vice presidential nominees to try and defend whatever position their party has? Because you don't want to outshine your boss, do you?
I think they're going to defend the positions that they're their partner does have. But at the same time, I think even if we look at Vance, I think he's going to take the opportunity to provide some, well, let's say he should, right, take the opportunity to provide some depth and detail to Trump's conservative populism, right? He needs to be able to speak a little bit to the area where former President Trump left off by saying he has a concept, right, of some of these things. He should be able to sort of provide more detail to those areas, right, that were left a little gray during the presidential debate. And I think the same thing for Vance. I think the same thing for Walz. I mean, he's also going to speak to some of these areas, that Harris has in terms of policies, and sort of hone in on it with more detail and also support the stance that Harris already has when it comes to immigration, when it comes to crime, and now really when it probably comes to foreign policy. I'm sure they probably touch upon that.
Wendy, Tim Walz has coined this weird label for Vance, even like kind of for the whole Republican Party, but especially for Vance. How has Vance deflected that? And how, what are the kinds of the things that he's said, about his opponent? I mean, they're both kind of seen as attack dogs, right?
They are. I mean, J.D. Vance, he is very good at this. He had to go through a number of debates when he was in the Republican primary for the nomination to run for Senate as a Republican in Ohio. So he has been, I think, better tested in debates. And the question is, does he really want to be the mean guy? It's one thing to call someone weird, but it's another to sort of really disparage people. We saw Donald Trump do that and refer to Kamala Harris's sort of mental disability. The Americans, for the most part, don't like that in a president. I mean, Trump won in 2016, granted. But generally speaking, given an alternative, they'll take the alternative. So J.D. Vance has to be tough and firm, but I think if it comes off too mean, especially if Walz makes a mistake, and if he looks too aggressive, he'll look like a bully. And he's already been, accused of that kind of demeanor. And again, I think Walz has to come back and say, is this really the kind of president you might want, and vice president? Because every time he says this person could be president, it's reminding people of Donald Trump's age and possibly his own frailty. So that's, I think, the way Walz is going to deflect anything that J.D. Vance throws at him.
Do you think that they're trying to, both of them, given everything that you just said, that they're trying to, hold themselves back and be more diplomatic and try to appear nicer and even more presidential?
Well, at least what we used to think of as presidential. I mean, I think everything we always thought about presidents sort of has gone away in so many ways. But yes, I mean, especially today, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of escalated conflict in the world. And, people can be tolerant of some joking around. But if they're frightened, if they feel uncertain, then you have to be a steadying force, a calm force, and look like a leader that people will say, okay, I feel like you can run the country. And that's why I think I'm predicting that they will be more restrained, I think, than they would have been if the world wasn't really so so tense right now in terms of so many international conflicts.
And now, yesterday, are you expecting to hear about dogs and pets and a few other issues as part of the immigration debate that's going to come tonight?
I hope we do not hear those things, and I hope Vance probably takes the opportunity to correct himself and really set the stage for something more serious. I think, they really should stay away in terms of labeling, different groups in our society, because it takes away from them talking about real policy. So I think that he will take the opportunity to speak more in detail to Trump's policy and what the Conservative Party can bring to the American people.
Tina, as another journalist, it's up to the CBS journalists what kinds of questions they're going to ask. But What do you think are going to be the big topics and issues that they're going to bring up tonight, and that these two guys are going to have to, you know, show where they stand on show their positions on these things?
I think the economy is top of mind for a lot of folks in the U.S. right now. So definitely the economy, and then immigration, and abortion as well, too. Trump and Vance have a lot of room to make up for women, because women polled are leaning more now towards Harris since she entered the race. So they have a gap to make up there in terms of women voters. And so that's a key issue, each of their positions on abortion, since Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Now, Tina, in terms of expectation, of course, this will be spinned either way. Does it really matter who wins tonight? Because, I mean, what really matters, or what people really want to tune into, is the presidential debate, and the president, you know, makes the rules and makes the tough decisions. So regardless of how they perform tonight, would that affect the presidential candidates?
You're right. I mean, I think historically we've seen that VP debates don't typically move the political needle that much. But you're also talking about a race right now between Trump and Harris that is essentially neck and neck. I mean, it is a really tight race, and they are essentially tied right now. So if this platform, this debate, offers a chance to push either one over the edge, it could very well do it tonight. It could very well happen tonight. And each of these VP candidates really bolster their respective running mates' positions, policies, stances, and their standing in the eyes of Americans.
But Wendy, let's follow up on that point. You know, most agree that Kamala Harris won the debate that she had with former President Donald Trump. But she edged up a little bit ahead in the polls in the few weeks directly after that. But then, you know, they kind of evened out again. And like she just said, you know, they're kind of neck and neck in all the states that really, really matter. So, I mean, even if one comes out looking like they are the winner after tonight's debate, like, how much in the overall scheme of things does it matter with American voters?
Well, I agree with what my colleagues have already said, in the sense that, you know, most people know if they're going to vote today. They know that they intend to vote if they haven't already started voting early. But some people may still genuinely be undecided. You know, maybe they've switched back and forth between, you know, Trump in 2016, but then Biden in 2020. And they may vote for a president at one level party and then a different party in another race. And a lot of these swing states have Senate races that have been very highly contested. So there's a lot of information coming at them. And they could say to themselves, in the end of the day, which team do they want? So if one person does very badly tonight, it could push those people to say, you know what, I don't want that team. You know, I'm actually gonna vote for Trump if, you know, Walsh does badly, or vice versa. And certainly I think also the polls tighten for lots of reasons. More people pay attention as we get closer to the election, and the pollsters are better at estimating likely voters. And that happens the closer you get. People can say, I've already voted early. That puts them in the likely voting category because they already voted. And they just get a sense of certainty, a better sense of certainty. So polls typically tighten as we get close to the election for that reason, no matter what.
Now, Yetunde, talking about just a follow-up as to that, when we talk about undecided voters, polls and reports indicate that those who support Kamala Harris and her team already made up their mind. Those who support former President Trump already made up their mind. So where is this undecided voters? Do they really exist?
Well, so two things. One is, political science typically finds that people like to have an answer when they're asked a question in a poll. You know, they don't like to express, you know, uncertainty or, you know, lack of information. So more people say they're sure than they typically are. And we see this because we see people saying they're going to vote one way and then they vote another. So we know that they sometimes do change their mind. So it's sort of built into the estimate of uncertainty that people like to say, oh, yeah, I know what I'm doing. But in fact, they do change their mind. We saw that also with James Comey's press conference on Hillary Clinton's sort of, you know, laptop problem in 2016. People said, oh, yeah, I changed my mind after that. Mm. So there are still people who are uncertain. And there are reasons to be uncertain. Do you want Trump back or not? Was he that bad or not? And then with Harris, people don't know what she'll do as president. And if anything, Waltz can fill in some of those gaps tonight. So if he stays on point, he can explain to people, this is what you'll get when you cast a vote for her. Come over to our side and stay there.
Tina, you know, we cover the world. We're the voice of America. How important is this to foreign leaders, not just this vice presidential debate, but this election, in terms of not just America's foreign policy, but just, you know, democracy and, you know, how it a lot of people would agree that it came under threat not that long ago. And we're the U.S. is the bedrock of democracy. I mean, are foreign leaders watching this as closely as you might think?
My sense is that they are. I mean, we have two very starkly different presidencies between Trump and Biden. If we think about Kamala Harris, more or less being an extension of that to a certain degree, there is a certain a tradition that's followed there, and not at all with Trump. And we know that, and we've seen it, and so. Depending on which country you're from, you know, you may be looking forward to a certain result or not, but you're definitely tuned in.
Yeah, you're tuned in. Will this debate be style over substance, or do you think it might take another turn depending on how it shakes out?
I think we're going to be looking at substance. We're going to be looking at substance because we need to also, the American people want to pin down, you know, this is an opportunity for both candidates to introduce themselves to the American people. So they're going to be looking at how much depth they bring into the conversation, how much, you know, substance they're able to provide and also support, you know, their presidential partner, right? So I think both things really do matter, right? We kind of have an idea of both candidates just through the media and sound bites and click bites of things that they've said. However, this will give us an opportunity, and I think give the American people an opportunity to figure out what type of substance, right? Do they have substance? Do they have what's necessarily that's needed to be a vice presidential, the vice president of the United States? And when it comes to style, I don't think it's mostly style. I think it's really looking at the personality of the individual, right? Would we trust this person to be the second in command, right? Would we trust this person, you know, God forbid something happened to the president, can they assume that position and be able to lead the American people? So those are things that I think people are going to be looking at today. So it's really going to be the substance, and there's also going to be the personality fit of the candidate.
Yeah, that's the attendee. Wendy, do you agree with that, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think that's right. So it just says to you, you know, when you're looking at these two candidates, like we said, who are not that well known, one has been getting bad press for what he says. The other can look, for lack of a better word, you know, a little bit jovial, you know, just sort of like a friendly, nice guy. But that is not somebody, especially in a time of international conflict, you necessarily want to be president of the United States or vice president. So what qualifies the governor of Minnesota? Walter Mondale, by the way, who ran with Jimmy Carter, was a senator from Minnesota when he ran, and Hubert Humphrey was a senator from Minnesota. So Minnesota has produced national candidates who have served as vice president. So when we see that, we say, okay, what does Minnesota have to do with anything? And then J.D. Vance will try to tout his record as a senator, even though he's only been there a little while. But I don't know that he'll back off these claims he's made. He won't back off the comment about women with cats, and he has not really apologized for perpetuating a terribly false claim about about refugees, Haitian refugees, in Springfield, Ohio. So, you know,
which was a completely false
come up in the debate, and how he handles it, I think, you know, we talk about the undecided or the independent voters, that's where that, oh, I don't really like that guy, can come in. So we'll see if he backpedals or tries to soften his answer, particularly in that very controversial issue area.
Right. And I was just saying that, which was a completely false claim, by the way. And when you say that Vance has not backed off, well, neither has Trump either, off of that claim that Haitian immigrants or migrants in that area of Springfield, Ohio, were actually eating cats and dogs, pets of people. I'm here in our Washington, D.C. studio, and I'm joined by none other than Douglas Mpuga, VOA journalist and show host. Thanks for being here, Douglas.
Yes, hi, Carol.
And joining us on the line is Yetunde Omede, professor of global affairs at Farmingdale College, a state university in New York, and J. Peter Pham, distinguished fellow with the Africa Center of the Atlantic Council and former U.S. ambassador and special envoy for the Sahel region. And he's here in Washington as well. Welcome back. Ambassador Pham, let's start with you first, and thanks for joining us. What, for you, were a few of the highlights of tonight's debate?
Well, I think several things. First, I think, and thank you for having me with you and with my fellow panelists, Carol. But I think that the first thing is, I think, how much commonality there was on a number of positions. Several times we heard Governor Walz, and we also heard Senator Vance say they agreed with each other or entertained for us. That to me is a promising start. But we certainly had very clear contrast. I think right out of the starting gate, in the very first question posed, we had Tim Walz struggle a bit getting Iran and Israel fumbling that. And you saw it, if you watched the debate on television, you saw a little bit of in the faces of the two gentlemen. Governor Walz, was carefully taking notes through most of it, whereas Senator Vance, I think, showed himself a more adroit debater and looked at the screen or looked at his opponent. But I think that they also raised, despite the commonality of vision on certain matters, very clear contrasts. And I think Governor Walz had the tougher task to both, speak to the future, but at the same time run away from the record of the Biden-Harris administration, a challenge that Senator Vance perhaps didn't have. So I think that you saw that kind of tension in some of the things that were said. So those are some of the things. And unfortunately for many of our listeners abroad, I think the other thing is how very little foreign policy came into this debate. I know many of our listeners overseas want to know about their regions of the world and Africa in particular, but that's the nature of American domestic politics. Our elections are, often decided on domestic matters, not foreign policy.
This is Douglas. Let me go to Yetunde. Yetunde, in your opinion, do you think either of the VP candidates managed to change perceptions of their campaigns tonight? And if so, on what issues?
Looking at Vance, thank you for having me today. Analyzing Vance's sort of approach and bringing, I think, a sort of calm to the vice presidential debate. I think there was a level of civility that I think the American people was happy to see tonight, where both candidates could go back and forth on critical issues, but do it in a respectful manner. I think that was one of the key things that we can take away just in terms of both candidates and also in terms of Vance. But at the same time, I also think that they were able to communicate. I think on Walz had more details. He was able to communicate real critical issues when it came to health care, when it came to immigration, to the American people. And I think that was where the substance was. I think he had more substance than Vance. And that's my takeaway from it. But I'm pleasantly surprised to see the way Vance was able to compose himself. But I'm more leaning to the way that Walz was able to convey more depth and detail in the policy areas.
Ambassador Pham, what about that civility that Yetunde is talking about? And do you think it was substance over style with Vance and Walz? Or how do you come down on that?
Well, I think the civility was, I think, something much to be lauded from both gentlemen. I would beg to differ on the substance from Governor Walz. After all, he dodged the very basic question of why, over the years, he's been telling this fabulous tale about being in China during the Tiananmen Square massacre of July 4th, 1989, when it's been exposed in the last 48 hours that he didn't make it to China till several months later, despite having not only told this tall tale over the years, but testified in Congress in 2009 and 2014 about being there at the time, and he dodged that. So I'm not sure about the substance part of that, but I would agree on the overall civility, which I think is important for the world to see.
Well, Peter, let me just ask a real quick follow-up on that, and then Douglas is going to talk to Yatunde. But, you know, he did say, hey, I'm a knucklehead on time frame. And he pointed out that he was over in China several times, actually, but first as a teacher, then he went back several times and was there.
Well,
with
he was in China half of it, as many times as he's claimed over the years. Again, thank you to public media for bringing this out, but he's claimed 30 visits, and people have only tracked down about 15. So, and, you know, I think something, it's one thing to be a knucklehead and getting facts garbled, but I think something as major as being present for a major historic inflection point like the Tiananmen Square massacre and being there or not being there, that's not something you just garble.
Yatunde, Peter earlier mentioned about foreign policy. These candidates were asked a question at the beginning whether they would approve a preemptive strike on Iran. Who among the two do you think gave a convincing answer, if any at all?
Well, I think the convincing answer is not in what they said, but in the facts of the matter. And the facts of the matter are that, the Iranian attacks occurred despite the famous 1 year ago, end of October, Vice President Harris's don't do that, something President Biden himself, it's the failure of deterrence. It didn't happen under Trump. It did occur that today, sadly, on the eve of the Jewish New Year of Rosh Hashanah, almost 200 ballistic missiles were fired on the state of Israel. That didn't happen before. So I think the facts lay it out that deterrence has been lost. And those missiles were paid for by the $100 billion that the Biden-Harris administration released to Iran, supposedly for humanitarian assistance. So the record speaks for itself.
Yatunde, let's stay on that for a second with Israel and Iran. You know, there was just, this is just all happening in the last 24, 48 hours with nearly 200 long-range missiles being fired by Iran at Israel. And they were talked, they were asked about would they oppose a preemptive strike. And how do you think they both did with their answer on that?
I think, they didn't go too much into detail, but they definitely voiced their support for Israel, right? And I think that they're going to, in a sense, support what their candidate, what their, presidential partner are saying when it comes to Israel and Iran. And, of course, Vance is going to sort of lay the groundwork in terms of blaming, the Biden and Harris presidency in terms of the decisions that they made in creating a non-deterrence for Iran. But at the same time, I think their answers were a little bit limited. And what they agreed upon was their support for Israel. And that's...
Yeah, staying with Yatunde, briefly on immigration. They both candidates tangled over the issue of migration. They were asked about the issue of separating children. Who among the two do you think was more convincing on immigration?
In terms of, in terms of convincing, I think Waltz was able to sort of present a framework for immigration policy and sort of rebuttal a lot of Vance's, rhetoric, stating that the reason why we have a failure in their opinion, in immigration policy was because of their non-decisive actions when it came to containing the swell of migrants coming here to the United States. But at the same time, I also do think that what Waltz was able to do was, in those rebuttals, also provide policy frameworks of how they were going to handle this going forward. So I think Waltz, to me, was a stronger candidate when it came to the immigration policy area. And also it didn't really help that Vance made these rhetorics around Haitian immigrants, right? Mm-hmm. He had to be on defense, really. Technically, really didn't defend it in a way or apologize. But that's sort of my take on it.
Well, Peter,
I'm sorry. I'm not sure we listened to the same debate. I didn't hear any explanation for why executive orders are being signed in the last months of an election campaign that weren't signed in the first 3.5 years. And the fact is, you know, we want to talk about Springfield, Ohio. Let's not talk about cats and dogs. Let's talk about what happens to a community. And I speak as an immigrant. You know, what happens to a legal one? What happens to a community of 40-some thousand when you get 20,000 new residents there?
Who, by a policy, you know, that was signed into law to bring them over, who they were facing issues in Haiti. Like, this is not that they came here unlawfully. So we have
they
to
did.
Go. Well, I'm
they,
giving
they
an objective
through,
to you. I'm giving an objective
program,
to you. That's
which
the
are
difference.
Poorly policed. Wait. But even the Inspector General of Homeland Security says it's poorly policed.
Wait, let's talk about the immigration issue still, but not the Haiti thing. You know, one of the things that Vance did say was that Harris is letting in fentanyl and using kids as drug mules. And, I mean, you have to admit, Peter, that kind of is just over the top.
He did not say that. What he said was she is allowing illegal immigration to occur in numbers that we have never seen in the history of the United States, almost 250 years of history. We've never seen these numbers. And within that flow, which is unpoliced, largely catch and release, we are seeing drugs come in with them. We're seeing terrorists come in. Those are all true facts. It's unpleasant, all that, but it is reality. And even what Senator Vance said about, I didn't have a chance to talk about, but, you know, the numbers that Governor Walz mentioned, about 4 million, shortage of 4 million homes. When you have 25 million illegal immigrants, that will, you know, increase the pressure on the shortage of homes.
Okay.
Obviously, if they
you got 10
there,
seconds
they
more.
Wouldn't be in a market for those homes.
Okay. And Douglas, what did you want to say? I mean, we should really ask, because we're winding up in the last minute now. What did you think? Did you think, if you had to say in the next 10 seconds, Yatunda, who did a better job tonight? And you don't have to pick exactly a winner, but who did a better job?
I think in terms of substance, Walz did a better job in substance in terms of creating
okay.
a
And Peter, what do you think? Yeah. Peter, what do you think?
I think Senator Vance hit it out of the ballpark, and he's the two gentlemen. Which would you prefer to have a heartbeat away from the presidency? The well-prepared 40-year-old senator or the 60-year-old doddering governor from Minnesota?
Thanks. For both of you, you're listening to VOA. I'm Carol Van Dam, and this is Voice of America in the Washington studios. Along with me is co-host Douglas Mpumla and Chinedu Afor. Have a good evening.